Welcome, this is James Corbett of CorbettReport.com. It's the 22nd of June 2012 here in Japan, and today I'm joined on the line from the UK by Julie Beale, a UK-based researcher who has a brand new website, getmindsmart.com, where she talks about issues from Agenda 21 to communitarianism to corporate social responsibility and many other aspects of the bigger picture besides. So Julie, it's great to have you on the program today. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you very much.
Well, I wanted to start off today with something that's happening as we speak in Rio de Janeiro, Brazil. And of course, that's the Rio Plus 20 conference on sustainable development that's taking place right now. And this is, for people out there who might not know, the 20th anniversary of the Earth Summit in 1992, which brought us, among other things, eventually the Kyoto Protocol sprang out of that, but also Agenda 21 itself actually sprang from this conference. So let's start talking about Rio Plus 20 and the significance of this conference and the Earth Summit in 1992 as well, and how this fits into the bigger agenda.
Okay, well, it's been 20 years since the first Agenda 21 was put together at the Earth Summit in 1992 in Rio. They're back in Rio, and they are beefing up the agenda that they've had going for the last 20 years. Most people only know about sustainable development and carbon, and they've fallen for it. But there's a hell of a lot more to it than that. I started to research it because I read about communitarianism and how it links to Agenda 21. And it's the work of Nikki Rapana that you need to check out from the Anti-Communitarian League. Most people won't understand what communitarian means. It's a kind of neutral sounding word that sounds quite positive, really. A lot of the things that communitarians are saying ring quite true. However, Agenda 21 has made them not only international, global pushes for how we should organise our lives, but it's also been made the law. Yet again, most people only know about sustainable development. They don't know about corporate social responsibility, and that's where most of my research has taken me, to just to augment the work of Nikki Rapana, really, because she dealt with sustainable development. I wanted to know what equity meant, because that's one of the parts of Agenda 21. So would you like me to explain what equity means? Okay, so Agenda 21 is all about balancing the three E's. Economy, seems all right. Environment, we all know about that one. And equity, which means social equity, which means we're all to be equal, all of the human rights talk is used for this. It has a lot of positive sounding arguments, but the way that it's leading is enforcing those. And enforcing things by law is a very, very different matter to theorizing about them. And that's my main contention.
So let's back up for a moment. Let's talk a little bit more about communitarianism, because as you say, I think a lot of people don't know what that is and will just assume it's the same as communism. But there is a difference. Let's talk a little bit about what communitarianism is specifically.
There's been a lot of communitarian theorists, such as, Amitai Etzioni is the main one, Michael Sandel, Michael Walzer. It comes down to the age-old argument between self-interest and the good of society or the collective. How much should you sacrifice your own self-interest for the good of your community? And communitarians argue that we should have a balance. Sounds very reasonable, but something that I would teach my children, for instance, to have a balance between the two. But I wouldn't make it the law. I think as soon as you start to make it the law, then the communistic socialist aspect comes in. It's the good of the collective, and that's the thing that you need to bear in mind. There's a whole lot of bioethical arguments, for instance, that can be made for the good of the collective.
Well, that's right. So it's a concern for the community is a good thing, but to make that into a law is where we start to deal with some very different issues, as you're detailing in your website. So let's think about how that plays into specifically the business aspect of things, because now we're having corporations, for example, touting their corporate social responsibility and talking about feel-good rhetoric. Right. It makes people feel good to hear that type of stuff coming from, you know, Coca-Cola or whatever corporation might be in question. But again, there's part of an agenda going on here.
Well, there certainly is. I mean, this is what we've all been calling for. And the mood has been there. And it's been, I feel, amplified by the media on purpose to... it's what the Occupy activists are calling for. They want accountability. We all want accountability from the rich, rich mega corporations, the multinational corporations. And so, yes, it's now company law the world over that all corporations must have wider regard to the interests of all stakeholders and must consider the interests of all stakeholders in any decisions that they make. Sounds quite woolly language, and yet I've read quite a lot about this. What really got me is that all of the big corporations are now socially responsible. So what does socially responsible mean? It means that they're caring. It means that they have a wider regard for the community. And of course, it also involves sustainable development, because that's a socially responsible thing to do. And all of the big corporations, including the chemical companies, Coca-Cola, they're all got their corporate social responsibility statements put out, and that's what most of them boil down to, is statements of intention. And then they'll have some finely tuned programs which they'll trumpet the results. And yes, I agree, they're making a small difference. My biggest gripe with them is that they're not addressing planned obsolescence. Planned obsolescence, in case anyone doesn't know, is built-in design faults. Back in the 1950s, if you read a book by Vance Packard, The Waste Makers, he goes into this in some detail. There was, industry nearly dried up, basically, because everyone had a TV and they had a fridge and they were sorted. Things were made to last. And they were sold on that basis, that they would last a long time. Only then the industry realised that they weren't going to get anywhere with that, because they weren't going to carry on selling things. And there were certain key figures that said, well, how about, and basically this has been going on since the late 1950s and is now a fine art to deliberately manufacture things in such a way that they won't last, because otherwise, if you think about it, they wouldn't carry on. Just the whole economy is built around this concept, and it's never been addressed by the sustainable development agenda. So I find it very difficult to believe any of the corporate social responsibility statements that are made by these companies, especially when they're still making such huge profits and paying their workers socially irresponsible wages.
Well, that's an interesting point, because sustainable development, if it means anything at all, must have something to do with, for example, planned obsolescence, and must address something like that, which, as you say, has been engineered into products for at least the last half century. In fact, in terms of light bulbs and others, going on for a century now. So it's unclear to me what sustainable development would mean unless it addresses issues like that. But let's take let's take a look at the agenda they're pushing. So let's imagine we play this forward 50 years. What type of economy do they want us to be living in?
Okay, that's something that I've given quite a lot of time to. My website's still on the go. I've got a huge amount of information to upload. One of the things I will be talking about is cradle to cradle, which is the answer to planned obsolescence. I've actually got it somewhere that they actually say we don't need to, won't need to worry about planned obsolescence anymore. It's biomass is a big part of this. It's all about renewability. This is what the new economics is all about. It's a cyclical system. Sick ideas of twisting what I believe in is about the ecosystem, biodiversity. They're using the rhetoric of that to bring in a new economic system, which has been the dream child of George Soros for a number of years, and he has been discredited by economists. However, he has now gained a very, very strong foothold in the global system because his ideas are being championed by the United Nations, the EU, and other key figures, OECD in particular, and just to name a few more names, because they really are absolutely everywhere, Jeremy Rifkin, Joseph Stiglitz, and then the other, George Soros is... his think tank is the Institute for New Economic Thinking, INET, and they want to bring in, it seems to me that we're on our way to a global digital system for multiple currencies, because currencies themselves can be traded. So that's why I don't think there's going to be one currency. All I can do is make guesses. I've put together a lot of information and people can look on the website and make up their own mind. But these names link in with Occupy in a number of ways. Peter Joseph from the Zeitgeist Movement, they're all calling for, all right, I haven't really said it yet, a resource-based economy. Yet again, the rhetoric all sounds absolutely fantastic. It sounds like caring, it sounds like my values, caring for the earth and caring for each other, because that is what my life is about. But if someone told me that had to be the law, that would be a different matter altogether. And there's one thing that I've lived in fear of and that I do not want for my children, and that is to be tagged with an RFID chip. And everyone knows that we're well on our way towards that. We've got, you know, cards that you can just wear, contactless cards and stuff. But I'll tell you about guardian angels in a bit. It's quite difficult to get your head around what George Soros is saying. And I need to find a way to sum it up on the website so that people don't have to try and understand complexity theory too much. But yeah, like I say, it's like the cradle to cradle idea. It's all about feeding back constantly. And if you think about what's happened with the capitalism that we've had for, I'm not going to say how long, but it has certainly over the last 100 years, it's completely relied on oil, gas, coal. And as we've been told, you know, peak oil and all that, they're running out. The system is collapsing. And in all of my research, I mean, this is the thing about what I found out about the new economics. In all of my research on corporate social responsibility, I've spent, I mean, I can't stand the whole business thing, but to try, I had to get my head around it and was like, I'm so appalled at what they were saying. So I spent all of January and February crawling over business websites. And although I haven't put everything up yet, I've got a hell of a lot to say. I've got books about it, about corporate social responsibility. And the thing that I really picked up on while I was crawling all over all those business websites is that they're all talking about revolution and transformation. In fact, Davos was called the Great Transformation this year. And so I couldn't understand why all of them were saying this. And they're all talking about the collapse of the economy and pointing fingers and saying this is wrong and we need change and we need something, you know. And, you know, on one of them there was even a calendar of all the corporate crimes that have been committed, which to me is, that's the kind of thing they normally try and sweep under the carpet and hide. So when I started to find out about the new economics and what they're planning on doing, well, those things started to crop back up again in my mind, the revolution, the transformation, all the faults and why we need something new. As I mentioned earlier, it's spearheaded, let's say, by George Soros and his INET, Institute for New Economic Thinking. It goes under the banner Beyond GDP. And as I mentioned, Occupy are also calling for measures to go beyond GDP. Well, that's not really telling you anything, is it? Go beyond GDP. Well, GDP, gross domestic product, that's how, you hear it in the news, that's how we measure a country's success, by measuring GDP. And going beyond it, they've only got one answer. And that answer is natural capital and human and social capital. Note the word capital. This is the reinvention of capitalism. And in fact, it's endless, perpetual capitalism, because it capitalizes on nature, which is renewable if you put your money in the right places. It's capitalizing on us, it's turning us into a commodity. Not only nature and people, but concepts surrounding those, just like carbon is a concept. And various ways of measuring us have been worked out. And those ways of measuring all require numbers. Now, my theory is, it's a theory, but if you look on the website, I think you'll find quite a lot about it. I mean, the whole theme of social, everything is social now. So what we hear about on the ground is social business, and it all sounds fantastic. Yeah, so when I've heard about social business, I thought, well, that's good. You know, very positive sounding things. But what you need to understand is that this, everything's social now. All corporations have to be social. It's not just so, the social businesses aren't next to, you know, oh, this corporation's and a social business. Everything has to be social, and various law. I mean, here in the UK, we've had laws passed requiring government departments to, you know, value the social aspect at all times. And in trying to figure out what, say, like investors, philanthropic capitalism will be another thing on my website. Check out Rockefeller. But yeah, investors are putting money into social businesses and they want to know what the return on their investment is going to be. It's called the social return on investment, SROI. So yeah, there's a lot, that's just one of them, but there's a whole lot of ways of measuring social good. I don't know what you would call, what would you call social good?
Well, social capital is a term that's been thrown around for decades now in kind of a metaphorical sense, but now, as you say, they're trying to develop these social metrics to actually measure them.
All of the stuff about social capital links into all the metrics that have been invented and designed to measure our social capital online. So your social graph is... you can ascribe values to that. So your the sort of the pattern that you make on the internet measures how powerful you are and how worthy you are. Because the more friends that you have, the more influence you have. If you're a nobody,
and you won't have any friends, and you won't have any influence, and you won't be worth much to a corporation. So social capital is definitely highly measurable, and is in fact one of the things that, going beyond GDP, wants to measure. Social capital is different to human capital, because natural capital is all about measuring nature and concepts related to nature. Human capital is your individual worth in the workforce. As you can imagine, some people don't have any worth to a corporation. And social capital is the communitarian concept of how we all combine together and work together. And it's the total value that we create in small communities or on a larger scale as a country. And that's what these happiness indicators and global well-being indicators are all about.
So how does this relate to the technology that's being developed now? Because I know that you write about RFID and smart dust and things like that, but how does that really tie into the agenda?
Smart dust. Oh, well, it's smart dust are tiny, tiny little mini computers using nanotechnology, and they are the size of dust. They're being used to see clouds, and then they fall to Earth. So they're already everywhere. There's a lot of people, I don't know about this, but it's worth thinking about Morgulons or Morgulons, I'm sure how you say it, strange nano fibers that move. And I'm going to go into that more on my website. That will be purely speculation, unlike everything else, which I feel is amply evidenced. But yeah, I will be talking about, I'm not going to try and talk about it now, but HeLa cells and Agrobacterium and how they might be connecting with this nanotechnology in the smart dust. If you think about natural capital and human capital, it's going to need surveillance. They're going to need to know, for instance, if you think about your value as a human being to a corporation, you need to not just be sort of physically well, it's all about, they would want to know that you didn't smoke, that you drink a little. Got to be normal. Got to be really, really normal to fit into the scheme. They would probably monitor your shopping habits. Just like to know that you've got plenty of friends, that you've got the correct work-life balance, that you do enough exercise. And how are they going to check all these things? Well, at first I thought it was going to be surveys. I found some information, which I don't have on hand, but is on my website, about a recent scheme that's been run in parts of Africa, where they got people to answer surveys about their well-being, and were given incentives. They used mobile phones, and they had to send the information in via text messages, and they got sort of compensation through I think sort of credits to their mobile phone or something. Now, what are they going to do over here? Smart dust. We've got the planetary nervous system, the living Earth simulator. This is all from the European Commission. It's some projects they've got going on. They're all about aggregating the data in terms of collecting your own personal human data. They've invented, or they are in the process of inventing, guardian angels for a smarter life. I'll just read a little bit from here. The impact of guardian angels on society and the economy will be enormous. On an individual level, anyone could benefit from a personal assistant acting as a modern-day guardian angel, focusing on prevention in health and on personal safety. with the goal of maintaining or improving quality of life in a sustainable society. We want to make our environment more interconnected and smart, more energy efficient and safe. And when I read on a little bit further, it talked about them being implantable. We've got a physical guardian angel. So I'll read that. The physical guardian angels are quasi-invisible, zero-power, body area networks, or, if appropriate, implantable devices, monitoring vital health signals and offering the necessary information for taking appropriate actions to preserve human health. And then monitoring, that helps to monitor us. They got a picture here showing them being worn. Well, at first it's sort of saying that it's going to be on your wrist, but if you read further into it, like I just read out, it's talking about it being implantable. So they got a picture of someone sleeping. It's expected to help you all the way through your living life, from the, and it actually says from infancy into old age. And guess what? Involved in this project, which is future ICT for the European Commission, is George Soros' Institute for New Economic Thinking.
In wrapping up, obviously what we're seeing here is the formation of this system that's kind of a micromanagement nightmare out of Brave New World or something, where every aspect of people's lives will be thoroughly regulated. So I guess the question is, how do we combat that, or what should we be doing to prepare ourselves for what's coming and to hopefully avert this nightmare future?
Well, I've got something positive to say about that. This is one of my biggest things, is that I really do believe in taking action. Because I've lost a lot of friends recently. I don't mean lost them as friends, but the whole 2012 thing and the raising of consciousness has stopped a lot of people from taking any action. And everyone thinks everything is just going to be okay. Well, I can't help feeling that is part of the sort of brainwashing that's been going on to dissuade people from being more active politically. And speaking out loud, I want the Occupy movement to look on my website if necessary to get the information, but to not support the whole beyond GDP measuring natural, human and social capital. I'm thinking along the lines of using a bad situation to advantage, because in my own life, that's what I've found to work. I can sit and bewail that something's gone wrong, or I can turn it around and use it to my own advantage. So, Matrix tactics, that's what they're up to. Let's make it our own. We should call for ever more corporate social responsibility, more and more and more and more, like bit by bit by bit by bit. That's what they do. The Occupy movement are powerful, really, really powerful. So I'm really, really positive about that. I'm just really concerned that the wonderful fluffy sounding idea of valuing nature and valuing human capital should be turned into something like this. So the Occupy movement could use their power, think of themselves as a team rather than a collective, because collectivism is not the way to go here. That's what I believe that the powers that be want us to do, is to be a collective. And they've got all of their answers on a plate. Bombarding, get involved with business websites, start putting messages on there, make an impact. Let's merge the two worlds.
Well, it's a tall order, but I guess we have to start at least looking into this. So I hope people will check out getmindsmart.com, where there is a wealth of information and more going up, I believe, by the day as you upload more and more to the website. So tell people about what is on the website and what they can find there.
Well, I think I've covered almost everything. Another thing that you can find out about is about individual accountability and the corporate global vision. So the corporate social responsibility agenda, I bought a couple of books on leveraging stakeholder responsibility. Now, what that means is getting us to do the corporate social responsibility agenda for them. So that means sort of games in the office about how to reduce your carbon footprint, how much volunteering you've done. This is another thing that's really being forced on us. Donations, volunteering, and scoring points, which adds to your social capital. So yeah, check it out. There's a lot more coming, and spread the word, please.
All right, well, a fascinating topic and a lot to explore. So once again, I hope people will check out getmindsmart.com. Julie Beale, thank you for your time today.
Thank you so much, James. Take care.